This Steve Jones Show podcast is now loading. The Steve Jones Show podcast is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by NIL Game Changers, Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, and Brewers Outlet. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And this half hour is brought to you by NIL Game Changers, the ultimate destination for name, image, and likeness opportunities for both athletes and businesses. Visit NILGameChangers.org to start your journey today. Time now to bring in, where right now basketball is king, Minnesota. Go T-Wolves, go Neil Kulong.
Oh, what a game seven that was. I'm an early riser. I get up at just an ungodly time. So with that, I go to bed fairly early, and I watched the first half of it. And I was like, okay, I sort of thought this was going to happen. They weren't playing well, weren't looking good, down a bunch. So I turned it off at halftime, and I'm like, all right, I'll watch the rest when I get up if I can avoid hearing about, you know, what happened when I get out of bed. I look at my phone. I've got 8 text messages. So I'm like, okay, well, I'm not feeling like they won, but let's just watch it through here. So I did. I almost woke my wife and daughter up. I was bouncing off the wall. It was just a great second half. Probably not so much for Nuggets fans, but as a Timberwolves fan, it was some of the best basketball we've seen of them, and they're putting it all together now, which is not something we're used to around here. I mean, it literally was 20 years ago the last time they've been in this spot. That's kind of a stretch of futility, to put it mildly. It's hard to even think back how long ago it was when they were in this series. Man, was that fun. And it's still going to be fun, too. This is a winnable series. It's going to be a good one, and we're excited for it.
Yeah, it is going to be a lot of fun, especially when you've waited that long. It's like waiting 86 years for a World Series. Oh, wait, I lived that already. Okay. Okay, so I asked you a question last week. What do you look forward to on a schedule release? Is there something you look for first? You and I went back and forth on it. You said you might look into it further with some other people as to what they look for first. Did you find the time to come up with some of those answers just for the fun of it?
I did, and I jotted down my notes here. I don't know if this is going to be a surprise to anybody else, but I find this interesting. Of the 11 people I spoke to, people responded with, I don't know, I'm not sure, something that sort of expressed the idea that they don't even know what they're looking at. And right, the general sense that I got from people is they look at the whole schedule. Some people, their secondary answer was their week one opponent. Some said how many primetime games they had, or what dates were the primetime games. You know, some people are looking to go to the games themselves or kind of put together their work schedule with it. But by and large, the answers varied quite a bit from person to person. But generally speaking, it was there wasn't one solid thing. They list off a couple different things if they're taking in the entire schedule just for what it is. Getting a sense of rivalry games, that was a big one. You know, whatever they would play, if those rivalry games were on prime time, I thought that was interesting. That was one of the more specific answers that I got. It seemed like a pretty eclectic group overall, and I would probably put myself into that as well. I noticed, looking at the Steelers schedule when it came out, the first place I went to was week one. Week one opponent, home or away, what they're doing with that. And then it was the rivalry games for primetime. How many of those do they get on primetime? How many are at home? Then I found myself checking out the rivals' schedule. Who are they playing the week before they play the Steelers? Some people felt that was, you know, something of note as well. And then I had a laugh because looking over the Steelers, the juggernaut, final eight games that they have, it's almost comical the way that it's set up. But for me, it's like that's not a schedule maker thing. That's, you know, they knew who they were playing. And they have a very, you know, the schedule is balanced as such that if you've got a pretty big hole at some point in your schedule, you've got a real advantage somewhere else. And I think that's what the Steelers have. They, you know, they're three home games in a row, a primetime game at the tail end of that at home, a bye week, and then they're at Washington. That's a pretty nice stretch of games. And the schedule is only so big. You're always playing an NFL team. You're always playing good opponents, in my opinion at least. I know some people don't think that. Some are more winnable than others, but to face the teams the Steelers are at the end of the season, you got to face them all at some point anyway. Right. You know, the Mike Tomlin often used, or at least it was used back in the day quite a bit more. Iron sharpens iron. You're playing playoff level competition at the end of the season. That's where you're trying to get to anyway. And on top of that, theoretically, if all of your easier opponents are earlier in the season, then you can stack up enough of a record that you play 500 football down the stretch, get you a ticket to the dance, which is really what you're aiming for here anyway. So overall, I think it was a schedule release. they're going to play these teams that we knew about. I don't find that there's great significance in the order in which they play them. And if any team, any fan base should recognize that, it should be the team that last year went 1-2 over the easiest stretch of games they'll ever have ever again, like they did last season, and rallied behind their third-string quarterback to still qualify for the playoffs. So for me, I don't think it really matters. It all comes out the same in the wash. Whether or not you can get to that maybe 9 but probably 10 win mark, make it to the postseason and take it from there, that's really what it's always about.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I just thought I would ask. I mean, so Netflix will get Christmas, and I think I saw the number. Didn't they pay something like, I don't know, 60 to 80 million a game or something like that, or for the day?
For the day, yeah. They have the two games. I saw 120 between
120.
The two games.
120, two games, yep. So, yeah, I said 60 million a game. Yep, 60 million a game.
Yeah.
Yep.
That probably is market value, I would think. I haven't done the math to space it out over the ginormous contract they're given to the broadcast, but to get two premium games, that price is going to be a little bit higher. And the ones they got are premium games. So, their business, worth the money. I can see why they're doing it. I definitely see why the NFL wants to see whether it's going to work or not, because they'd love to sell off individual games at retail prices, which is what they're doing with Netflix, and kind of sending a message to everybody in that regard. They're not above doing that.
Okay, so why is it that as regular season games, that which Fox, CBS, and NBC, and ESPN, ABC, and Amazon all paid for 10-year deals, why is it they don't get these games?
I think the literal answer to that is probably in the contract, where I'm sure the NFL has a clause to pull back something. Along with that, I'm just going to say this as an observer, not a lawyer. I didn't write the contract or anything like that. But my guess is the NFL had these earmarked for NFL Network. Not putting them on NFL Network for this reason or that reason, and you know, whatever it is they're doing right now with NFL Network, I'm not sure. But my guess is they were not a part of the negotiation.
Right. And you'd be asking Cruz, for example, of camera people, sound people, truck people to work on Christmas Day. So, you know, there's that part too.
Yep. Yeah, I can see that. However it is that they'll do that with whoever's cameras, I can't imagine Netflix is going to build out that audience. They'll probably subcontract somebody who's already doing it. That'll be interesting. Make a note of that for the future. I'm curious what they'll do with it, because if I remember correctly, when the NFL Network first came out and they were broadcasting games, it was a sight. I mean, they were not experienced. They really tried to do it on their own. You can get the broadcasters, talking about football. It's not real hard to get that, but that isn't the game. People don't understand how much is going on behind the scenes. And if you don't have an experienced crew that's working together, that has, that kind of boots on the ground level experience together, things get pretty messy. And it wouldn't surprise me if Netflix is going to try to do everything they can to avoid that and try to get somebody who's active already. But overall, yeah, I mean, they probably had their eyes set on this. Like I said, some cases it's smart to get the stability of the volume and give out the volume discount to have that 10-year commitment. Have a company largely planning its entire strategy around your product. You're going to get the attention that you want with it. You can grow and bend and flex with a strategic partner. At the same time, though, that retail rate, those one-off games, the a la carte method, I think there's value to that as well. I think the NFL has been asking themselves, what's the value of having this network in its current form when we could conceivably sell off individual games, provided the technology is available to keep the quality of the game that we're showing outstanding, and we don't have to pay for it and get even more per game than we do with our other rights partners. Now, does CBS like that? Does ESPN like that? Maybe, maybe not. I'm sure they would love to have a Christmas Day game, but the NFL probably smartly reserved major tentpole days like Christmas for their own use, and to be able to use that to get paid handsomely while experimenting with somebody else is a pretty good idea from a business perspective.
Mm. Okay. Last year when they did the schedule, there was a heavy emphasis, and there's a maximum number of primetime games you can get. And the Jets were, I think, one shy of it because of the Aaron Rodgers factor. And, of course, for the networks, every time the Jets were on after the opener with the Bills, there was no Aaron Rodgers. And we got to hear the Zach Wilson story over and over again. Right? Well, they're rolling the dice on them again. Are these the factors that make schedules so problematic for networks? Because, let's face it, you had a schedule built last year around a couple of guys, and he was one of them.
That's the inherent risk of that, but I found it funny. It's like, okay, we're for real this time. For real this time. I mean, the Jets are on primetime like 5 of the first 7 weeks or something, aren't they?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, wow.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not sure you want to put Aaron Rodgers on TV that much. We'll see. We'll see. I do think the machinations that go on behind the scenes, I think we will hear about that in the coming years, if not immediately. But you have to think they're fighting tooth and nail over this. And the NFL, the NFL created this. I don't want to call it a problem, but the conflict that exists to the point now where they've pretty much done away with the affiliations with the conferences. It's not just Fox on NFC,
right.
CBS on AFC anymore. That's significant. It's something that people aren't going to really discuss and haven't really discussed. But all of that, I promise you, is just due to the perception. I don't even know if it's one way or the other, but to be realistic, there's a bit more action in the AFC right now than there is in the NFC.
Mm-hmm.
And if the broadcast rights partners are paying that much money, they want Aaron Rodgers games. It doesn't matter to them if they're playing somebody in the NFC or not. They want an Aaron Rodgers game. So at some point, they're going to have to say, look, we're going to end up doing this week by week and having a bidding process putting this whole thing together. Is it a coincidence that the schedule came out later this year than it has any other year? I don't think it is. I think it's because that's what this has turned into now. And not that that's a bad thing. I'm not trying to claim conspiracy or anything. in a way, it's far more on them than it is the ravenous fan when the schedule comes out. They need to get things locked up, but until they can release the whole thing, they're not going to. So I think it came down to the 11th hour in a lot of ways of who's getting what game and where they're putting what. You know, it's they put so many Aaron Rodgers games on prime time, and I would imagine, I haven't looked at it real closely, any opportunity that you get to put Taylor Swift in your stadium and give the rights partner 3.5 hours of exclusive video content of Taylor Swift, whether she's walking or sitting in a stadium suite, I don't think it matters to them, but they want that. That's worth a ton of money, and they're paying a ton of money for it. So do they really care about Tennessee and Jacksonville this week? No, I don't care. Give that to another network. I want this game, and I want it on primetime. You know, this should be in this slot, whatever my primetime slot is, my most lucrative spot. That's where I want it. And you're having to really mitigate the argument between all of them, and they're bringing in more and more partners now. That process gets a lot more convoluted. And I think that's, you know, really why it is. It probably came out a good 2 weeks later than what we could have reasonably expected for it to have come out based on past schedule releases.
The reigning Walter Payton NFL Man of the Year is Cameron Hayward. Voluntary offseason workouts, no show. Does not have plan to attend OTAs because he wants a contract extension. This guy has been loyal to the organization. What's been your thought on, for the first time ever he's done this, what's been your thought about where he stands at this stage of his career with the Steelers?
I think in a way it's almost a double negative, because if the team doesn't want to give him an extension, what they're saying is that he's not the future leader for them. And if he's not a leader, I don't think that Cam Hayward and his Hall of Fame resume needs to be at OTAs. So it call it a self-fulfilling prophecy. Now, the question to me is, do the Steelers want to pay him $16 million with no future in place with, in my opinion, an all-time player for the franchise? I don't think that's the right way to go about business with certain guys. You know, others, yeah, you got to make tough decisions. But Cam Hayward's been your bedrock for a long time. His contract is upside down. You know it is. If anything, I would have put money on the extension happening in March. I'm surprised it hasn't happened yet. It makes sense for both sides. Cam probably take a few bucks off to get another year. Maybe it's 2 years. However you want to do the deal, so he can make roughly what he's going to make this season and give you a reasonable opportunity to keep him next year as well, because the defensive line is young. They've added a bunch of pieces to it, pieces you should be excited about. I think Keanu Benton's a great young player, but they've missed on a lot of guys that they've tried to add into those spots as well. You know, they never really recovered in a lot of ways from Stephon Tuitt eventually retiring after taking a year off. You've got a good run out of Larry Ogunjobi. I'm not sure how much longer you can really count on that happening, but they've got to get younger at the position. They've definitely tried to do that, but bottom line, take age out of it. Watch Cam Hayward play last year and watch the rest of your defensive line. Are you telling me you don't need him? I don't think he's going to fall apart in a year. You need to get him in there. And you need to show the younger players, this is what we expect. This is who we want you to emulate. And we know that because the league just gave him what it says anyway is its most valuable trophy this offseason. Right. Yep. An award he was a finalist for I don't know, 19 straight years or something like that. It was they finally gave it to him. Lifetime achievement, if anything, but he's earned that award several years, you know, not to you know, downplay the accomplishments of anyone else that they gave the Walter Payton Man of the Year award to, but Hayward was on that level and has been for a long time. To me, the extension is a no-brainer. The fact that it hasn't happened yet, if anything, I think it's more, we're not going to commit to it now. And in a lot of ways, too, the stuff they won't tell you about is they'd like to get a look at you in person. What that means is you show up to OTAs, let's see what kind of shape you're in. We're going to decide from afar whether or not we want to give you a contract. Hayward's been around. He's been a union rep. He's not going to fall for that kind of thing. So he's not going to go to OTAs. It's voluntary. I don't think that anybody's going to hold it against Cam Hayward to not be there. He doesn't need to be there in that sense. He needs to prepare himself for the season. I trust that Cam Hayward, of all people, knows how to do that by this point in his career. He deserves an extension. I think the team is smart to give him one for a lot of reasons. It's something I see getting done, but this is how the game is played. You know, you kind of have to do these things. You can't give up the leverage you have as a player. I don't anticipate that it would extend into training camp, but I would think a deal would get done probably closer to that. But if Hayward doesn't want to show up and let them, you know, see his 36-year-old self out there, I wouldn't blame him. I could see how that could be used against you. But put the film on and tell me the guy still is not playing at a high level in the NFL. They absolutely should give him the extension that he's earned, give him some more security, because I don't see a path right now that they can guarantee that they wouldn't need him next year, too. You may as well tack on a year, split the money up a little bit, give him something for next year, but give him some security. He's earned that.
Always a pleasure, whether it's the NFL or the T-Wolves. Thank you, sir.
Absolutely. Go Wolves. Thanks for having me, guys.
And Neil Coulong. And this half hour brought to you by NIL Game Changers, your destination for name, image, and likeness opportunities, both athletes and businesses. Visit NILGameChangers.org to start your journey today. Final half hour, Mark Wogenrich on the Beaver Stadium vote today, 26-2 with 3 abstentions. Which, by the way, now here's some other things, just so you know. Upgraded field lighting, because they have to meet NCAA standards. We mentioned the club loge, founder suite, so forth on the west side. Expanded concourses, they're 14 feet now. They're going to go to 50 to 55 feet, okay, in that center ring and on the bottom. Gate F concourse will be used to get fan traffic into the stadium. We talked about the press box. 2 new video boards replacing the 2 current ones. Improved Wi-Fi and cell service. I know you've heard that before, but they're going to try again. Upgraded concessions, improved restrooms, welcome center for admissions, we mentioned that, and event space for weddings and meetings. All right. Okay. What they want is they want to use that building as many days during the course of the year as possible. All right. Mark Wogenrich on that and more next half hour here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Sunbury Motors Ford and North 4th Street Auto Plaza is having their spring SUV sales event. SMC has 17 of the iconic 2024 Ford Bronco Sports, and they are slashed up to $5,500, and they start from just $28,435. Sunbury Motors has the fuel-efficient Ford Escape discounted up to $4,000 and priced from only $29,935. Plus, qualified buyers get 0% financing. Choose from 28 new Ford Explorers, and SMC has them reduced to the lowest price ever offered. Just $39,770. Sunbury Motors has the roomy and reliable 2024 Ford Edge, discounted $4,500, and they are priced from only $37,565. With 0% financing for 48 months, Sunbury Motors is a fifth-generation Ford dealership, proudly owned by the Mertz family since 1915. SMC is where you want to be in May for your next new SUV.
Spring has sprung, and it's time to dust off those insurance policies. For over 100 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. With the experience of our trained and knowledgeable staff, you can rest assured that your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 570-286-5855 or visit our website at purdyinsurance.com to see what we can do for you.
Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Brewers Outlet, NIL Game Changers, Sunbury Motor Company, and Purdy Insurance. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And this half hour is brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, I went the Ford route. All with great warranties. Got the extended one. Chris, incredible. Jared was great. Fabulous staff over at Sunbury Motors. Great pre-owned inventory. Saw the lot. They go over each one with a fine-tooth comb to make your buying experience easier. And a service department that backs it up every step of the way. Routine, which you need. Difficult, which sometimes is necessary. It's all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf online at sunburymotors.com. I believe I have Mark Wogenrich now with us.
Yes, you do.
Mark, first of all, thanks so much for being with us today. Appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me, Steve.
All right, so an additional $630 million to bring the max total, and they say that's the max number, will be $700 million. As you covered the vote today, there were questions that were brought up. What did you think of the questions and the answers they received?
I think overwhelmingly it came down to cost versus value. This is what I think what some of the trustees who have issues with this, that's what they're coming to. One of the issues that came up was a separate proposal, evidently, that was made to bring in, I guess, outside agencies that would be a public-private partnership that would be part of the renovation. That would include some other renovations or other construction besides Beaver Stadium, like I understood some sort of maybe perhaps entertainment district or condo development, something like that. And ultimately, the university did not choose that route. They chose the route of just keeping it in house, self funding it through the athletic department. And I think where they're coming from with this is they're pitching Beaver Stadium as not just Beaver Stadium anymore, that this is a year-round entertainment facility in itself. One of the interesting things that Pat Kraft, the athletic director, said is that once Beaver Stadium is done, it would be, quote, one of the only multi-use entertainment facilities at this scale between Philadelphia and Pittsburgh. That, to me, is the core point that they're trying to drive home.
That's right.
With the new Beaver Stadium, that this is not seven Saturdays a year anymore, that this is a 365... this is a 365-day-a-year building. They're going to have a 20,000 square foot of additional event space within Beaver Stadium as part of a welcome center. That with the club space that's going to be added, with the club seating, with the suites, there's something like a founder suite and some other executive suites that are going to be in there. They're using that as revenue generation for football, but also that this is going to be used the rest of the year. And I don't think it's just going to be confined to big events like a Luke Combs concert or whatever comes down the road with international soccer. Allie Krieger, one of the board members, the new board members, suggested maybe a Women's World Cup game if the U.S. gets the Women's World Cup in 31. But this is just going to be event space. Even just think of things like weddings, meetings, trade shows, anything like that. Anything you can bring to Central Pennsylvania, I think they're looking to use Beaver Stadium in that way an awful lot more than it is now.
Yeah, in fact, I think they want to use meetings, weddings. You know, in other words, they want to have the kind of meeting space, wedding space, where that building is being rented out as often as possible. And let's face it, hey, we're going to have our wedding. We want to have it at Beaver Stadium. Okay, yep. Now it's going to cost you to do it, but they're trying to use that label as an intrigue to bring more business in like that.
Yeah, and I know they do some of that, like some of maybe the club seating area or like the recruiting lounge. Some of that is rentable space now, the suite.
Yes.
But it's simply not available. One of the things that Pat Kraft said, that they have a wait list for suites.
Right.
And that, I mean, when you're going to be adding that number of suites on the other side, that doesn't have to be just used during the season. Those suites can be rented at any time.
Well, more so than that, to me, suites on the west side have slightly more value than suites on the east side, game-wise.
Right.
But on the west side, because the sun's at your back in the afternoon.
Yeah.
Okay? It's not in your face. And that's a small thing, but something that has to be brought up. They want to upgrade the field.
The biggest thing, like I said, I think it was just the fact that this is now, Beaver Stadium is now going to be coined as a multi-use entertainment facility.
Yeah. Exactly. And look, they right now it has a backlog of $200 million in deferred maintenance, which everybody around here knew anyway. It was like coming out today. It was like, oh, okay. So they finally told everybody. Okay. All right. So, I mean, that's part of this. And that's something that it would have continued to accumulate if they had done nothing, right?
And I think the additional, what their, some of their estimates were, was that, you know, if you don't see those funds this year, then you're adding another $40 million.
That's
potentially
right.
To that in more deferred maintenance. So that is not a static cost. That's a rising cost. You know, the maintenance is to keep going. I mean, that's a steel structure. Steel needs maintenance. Things like those concourses are they're narrow. So in some spaces, Pat Kraft said, I was able to interview him this morning, some of them are like 14 or 15 feet wide. They're going to more than triple the width of some of the concourses. That is going to dramatically open up. And that's a full stadium thing. That's not just the west side.
That's
going to go to the east side as well. Things like escalators coming in, that they're going to improve circulation, some of the gate entry issues. All of that stuff that makes Beaver Stadium difficult to get into, to get around, to get out of, is all part, I think, of the infrastructure issue of it.
Right. More escalators, more elevators. The expanded concourses will go from 14 feet, which is what Mark just pointed out, to 50 to 55 feet. So that essentially quadruples the width of the concourse. They'll add the Gate F concourse will be used to get traffic into the stadium. Two new video boards. I know the Wi-Fi cell service thing, I mean, it's like become a bad joke over the years, but yeah. More concessions, I think 102 more.
Like a 70% increase, and the bathrooms, obviously 15% more bathrooms, which surprised me. I was like, I thought that number might be higher, but
yeah, I mean, because again, the last thing you want are lines, because you want people to leave the stadium regardless of the score and say it was a great experience. That's what that stuff does, in my opinion.
Yeah, no question.
Yeah. Okay. So now the question is going to be, Sarah Thorndike was there, and she was talking about the money part of it. And she explained the logistics of not doing anything, building brand new, doing this. What were some of her answers on this?
Yeah. So essentially, this was a three-pronged, or they modeled three issues. Not doing anything, which is, that's the bare minimum, that's the maintenance, that's a $200 million plan, that's just fixing what needs to be fixed. That doesn't address the revenue issue, and that's a key issue. As you know, we're getting into the new, where, you know, an athletic department is going to have to start paying players, they're going to have to generate more revenue from outside sources. That's part of this. A new stadium, as she said, is $2 billion, and that's going to be a sub 100,000 seat stadium. You're not getting 106, or probably even 100,000 seat stadium for $2 billion. So that's, you're building a smaller stadium. It might be in the 90s. So that's how they settled in on the current number, which is $700 million. She actually told the board that they have a target number of $664 million. They're budgeting out to $700 million. $70 million was what was bought released last year, was approved last year through bonds. So then the next big phase would be, or the, what they approved today essentially was up to $630 million. And that will be funded through bonds, philanthropy. They're looking at raising about $134 million through philanthropy. And they've also modeled that revenue, the revenue increases that will come from Beaver Stadium, the extra usage, the suite sales will pay for this over, it's modeled out over 30 years. She said they don't think they're going to need to borrow over 30 years, but again, that's their modeling where they're going. And as always, just to reiterate, State Athletics is self-funding, so none of this money will come from the university budget, tuition dollars, anything like that. She did tell me something, I think this was maybe hinted at last year. Penn State would accept. They're not the budget does not include any modeling for state grants. So there's no state money as of now that would be used. But if the state wants to offer something because of, you know, the statewide usage of Beaver Stadium, they say that it's you know, that it is a facility that benefits the entire state. You know, Sarah said that they would welcome some sort of state grant or state funding, quote, as long as it is outside of what we get for our educational mission. So it has to be something specifically related to Beaver Stadium and not to the educational budget.
Was it brought up that if they wait, because the original proposal of this was like 2017, right around there, the original proposal?
Yeah, well, the athletics master plan came out in 2017, and Beaver Stadium was part of that.
And the bottom line is that the number on that was said to be approximately $400 million, if I recall correctly.
Right? I think
And this is what happens, Mark, all the time with, for example, the Olympic Games. Why do the Olympic Games financially struggle? Because they'll put in the bid 7 to 8 years before they have the games, and they're trying to project out costs. And then when they build it, there are cost overruns because everything goes up exponentially. Was it brought up today, if you don't do it now, it's going to cost exponentially more if you wait 5 years?
Many times. And even just with the smaller issues was regarding just maintenance. You know, specifically, you know, one of the costs, they said the cost of waiting just on maintenance will be $40 million a year. And that doesn't even account for everything else. Now, you can model in, perhaps costs get lower as inflation rates go down or interest rates go down, that sort of thing. So that, you know, it is fluid. But by waiting, you're just adding, they're adding like 5%, 5 to 7%. With, you know, with just maintenance costs, material, labor, construction, that sort of thing, every year. So you keep doing this, you wait another 4 years, you know, it's another $100 million, so even more.
This will be done in phases. At 24, we'll see, no, what you see now is what you're going to get. You will see a new football field, because right now it's all dirt. They tore it out last week. But it'll stay the same. But starting in January, there'll be changes and done in phases. Did they discuss what that means to capacity and movement of fans while they're doing this in 25 and 26?
The biggest thing to me, Steve, is this is going to be our last year in the press box, as I understand it, correct?
Yes, it is.
Phasing out, that the press box is going to be one of the first things. And starting in 25, that's going to go along with that, you know, the top half of that west side of the stadium. That's all coming out. And as Pat Kraft called these, they're building a superstructure in that place. So there's going to be some temporary bleachers installed. I think they want to minimize that. I would assume, I think some of the numbers were maybe less than, you know, it should be less than 1,000 people probably impacted. Okay. I don't know how much capacity is necessarily going to be impacted by that, but it will be. They're going to install temporary seating, some temporary bleachers in the place. But we're going somewhere else for 2 years. Yeah. That certainly is what it sounds like.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, home sweet home.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so that next 25 will be the upper half of the west side. Is going to be demolished, and then 26, the lower bowl seating is going to be replaced. That'll be replaced with club seating. And again, as Pat Kraft said, they want to have the minimum amount of impact.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact,
you will see some temporary seats in there.
Right. Yeah, because the club seating on the west side is what they do at Michigan State with their box, and that's how they do it. I know they only had one picture of it. All right. One rendering. What did you think of the one they put out?
It looked very temporary to me. They looked like placeholder rendering. I saw two. There was one on the website that they released, and the one in the package. Nice, I guess. I don't think that's what it's going to look like. It's much different than the brick facade that we saw 7 years ago.
Yes, yeah.
You do, and then the interesting thing, that the rendering is specifically of that west side, and that is where what they're calling the Welcome Center is going to be. So there's a lot of glass there. It looks fairly modern. That, to me, is not what we're going to get. As I understand it, or as I, you know, as I look at it, I think it's going to be something substantially different. But you do see there will be bleachers up, you know, above, so it looks like you're going to get some height again. That the bleachers will top out over kind of the substructure of the stadium that kind of had a unique design. And I noticed they replaced a lot of that parking with trees. I'm going to say that probably will change too.
Yeah, but it's part of that, you know, to be honest with you, part of that is what you have to go by what the College Township Planning Commission allows you to do. And that's something like, hey, Penn State approved it. College Township, like all the islands with the trees and the lighting that you have on the west side now, that was all mandated by College Township years ago. So,
right, okay.
Yeah, so there are certain things where, like, hey, why did they make that choice? They were told to make that choice. Like, why is the back? Remember, the back of the scoreboard used to have the championships on it. Well, guess what? It violates the sign ordinance, so they had to get rid of that too. So there's a lot.
Okay, that I didn't know. So.
Oh yeah, well, yeah, I've been here a while. All right, so.
Well, yeah, the township would be something to watch too. To whether you know what they approve or disapprove.
Right. Yeah,
at least regarding some of the specifics of this.
For example, the practice bubble. They had to go. They have to go to College Township about that because it's in College Township.
Right.
You probably haven't had a chance to do this yet. Any reaction from fans yet? Have you had a chance at all to gauge that, or is that too soon?
Specifically on this, I think it's a little too soon. But over the past year, my sense was that I think Penn State, at least from a fan perspective, landed in a sweet spot that I remember. I used to go to Yankee Stadium, like the old Yankee Stadium, which I loved.
Yeah.
But man, it was so hard to get around. You know, it wasn't modern. And I think, you know, fans do believe. In that this place, you know, Beaver Stadium needs to be upgraded, updated, and modernized. So that part of it, I think in a sense that anybody wanted a new building, especially if it was going to cost that much, if it was going to lower capacity. At that point, if you're building a new building, you're probably going to have to name it something. You're going to have to sell the naming rights for financial reasons. And so far, that's not part of this. I'm not saying that it can't happen, but Patrick Kraft has said that's not part of it. To this point. So I think they've landed on the right place with this among fans. They're going to be, you know, they're going to be inconvenienced, but I think at 27, they're going to get, if they get a better, you know, if the product is what comes through, that it's just a better place to be for 3.5 hours Saturday. Not only then, but it also is able to monetize itself in broader ways that can, that can help not just football. It's not going to be just a football thing, but it's going to be, you know, really important to football. But it can help monetize itself that it can benefit the rest of the athletic department. That's a huge thing that I don't know people really if they necessarily understand that part of it. This building has got to generate some revenue, more revenue.
Yeah, there are also 30,000 seats in there that were brought over from the west side that are now about 90 years old. You have you have other parts that are 64 years old, and you have the upper deck in the north end zone, which is now 33 years old. South end's the baby part.
20.
That's 23 years old. Hey, okay. Sometimes you have to look at it and go, okay, it's time. Hey.
Yeah, you got to unify the whole. Yeah, the whole space has to be unified in some ways. So.
Yeah, exactly. Mark, always a pleasure. Great work on this, as you usually do.
Thanks so much, Steve. Keep following along. This is not. This is only the beginning.
It is only the beginning, and you'll be one of the ones we'll turn to for it, too. Thanks so much, Mark.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate your time.
Mark Wogenrich joining us on the show. So... I know that they'll have to get naming rights for everything. You know, I thought maybe the press box they should call Suit City. No, not good.
We'd get it. It might confuse people when they come for clothes.
I'm telling you right now that they already know who he is. All we have to do is give it to local authorities, and they know. No. Bad idea. All right. Back tomorrow. Looking forward to it. This half hour brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com and News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Largest beer selection, imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
You want a unique way to display your brand. You need a team of seasoned experts to work with. You want to reach customers who buy. You want NIL Game Changers, a versatile consulting agency powered by former student athletes and coaches who work as NIL sports agents. NIL Game Changers will help you build powerful relationships with customers through compelling stories, with student athlete influencers as your leading edge. Finally, we'll equip you with the right media to drive your success home. NILGameChangers.org, building meaningful relationships with your customers.